It is Wednesday, June 1st, 2022. I'm Jess Lamar Reese-Holler, and we are on the phone this time with Don Broadwater from the American Legion Post 401 in Caledonia for the Caledonia Public Square Memories and Futures Project. Don, we're thrilled to have you, and can I just have you say and spell your full name for the record?
Donald W. Broadwater, D-O-N-A-L-D-W, Broadwater, B-R-O-A-D-W-A-T-E-R.
Perfect. Don, hopefully my questions come through this time, but just to start us off, can I have you share a little about when and where you were born and sort of the world you came up in? I know it wasn't in Ohio.
I was born and raised in Spock, Pennsylvania. That's about 60 miles south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we lived there until 1983. And we moved from Pennsylvania to Brookhaven, Mississippi. And we spent 5 years in Brookhaven, Mississippi. And then my job transferred me here to Marion, Ohio.
And what line of work were you in at that time in the 80s?
I worked for Harsco Corporation. We was a manufacturing facility for scaffolding, shoring, and forming products.
And they had a location in Marion then?
Yes, our location was behind the old Army Depot on 309 there, was where the location was at.
And that brought you to Marion County for the first time?
Yes.
So tell me, what were your first impressions of Marion County, and how did you end up connected to Caledonia, of all places?
Well, when we first came up here, we rented, our first house was in Caledonia. And it seemed, we liked it over there. We lived there for about a year. We rented a house. And then we moved out into the country and rented a house here. And we rented it for about a year. And then a piece of ground came up for sale. And I purchased the ground and had a mobile home on it, and we lived in a mobile home until I built a new house and garages here on this property.
And are you, I forget, I think you or someone said, are you just over the border into Morrow County?
Yes, I'm just 1 mile inside Morrow County line.
That's what I love about Caledonia. We're a bi-county community. We've got folks on both sides, so... So tell me a little bit, you said you moved to Marion County in 88, is that right?
Correct, yes.
So what was Caledonia like in 1988? What were some of your first impressions of the public square? What kind of shops and businesses and organizations were happening downtown, if you can recall?
Oh, they had the Reese's Market was the big thing. There's a lot of bars on the corners down there. I remember that. And they had the festivals back then. In the square where they had a beer wagon and that set up and a festival in the fall. And they had, for the kids, a dance every Friday night for them. Fantastic Friday, which was great for the kids to go up and dance or whatever they did. So it was a very interesting place, and it was great for the kids to grow up in.
And I know a lot of people I've interviewed have told me, Caledonia is a lodge town or an organization town. I think the Pythians were probably gone then, but at that time in the late 80s, right, we still had Oliver Lodge, 447 of the Masons, we had the Odd Fellows, and of course the American Legion, Post 401. So I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about how you got connected up with the Legion Post here in Caledonia and what it was doing in the late 80s.
My neighbor next door was a Legionnaire, and he actually got me involved to come over and join and go to the meetings, and that started, and then I became an officer the following year after I joined over there. So it's just been an ongoing growing process that I've been involved with the Legion ever since then. And I've been the commander of the post for 7 to 8 years.
So that's why everyone said I talked to John Brauer, because you're sort of the chief authorizing officer for the post right now.
Yes, I'm the commander of the post over there currently.
And for people like me who don't know a ton about the Legion, can you explain a little bit about what the American Legion is, who it serves, and the role it plays in the community in general, just for some background?
Yes, the Legion, what we're there for basically is to take care of the veterans and people in the community that we best we can. We sell what we call the tickets over there, and we get some money back from the tickets, percentage of it the state gives us back for selling them. And that money we have to put out into a 501c3 donated. All that money has to be donated. So we not only take care of the veterans, we take care of the Boy Scouts, and if we have someone in the community that we know is hurting, we have the Halloween we give to, Easter, Christmas, whatever they're doing, the Legion kind of kicks in a donation for everything that's going on in the community around there.
So you're essentially a service organization, but that does some fundraising in it. And I don't totally understand, are tickets, is that like scratch-offs or a Keno or lottery, or what kind of tickets do you mean?
No, they're pull tab tickets. We purchase them from a replicable seller, and those are all numbered and tracked by the state. It's all state run, basically.
So I've heard of pull tab tickets. I've never done it, but it's kind of like a lottery, but it's a different thing.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so that's your major fundraiser, and then you guys run a bar or in the post as well, correct? But it's not public.
Yes, there is a canteen in the post, and we do sell drinks in there, and our drinks are probably cheaper than any going to any bar or anything. We don't make money off of the liquor and that. That's not our main concern. So.
Got it.
I mean, we just need to break even to pay the bills and keep the post operational.
But mostly it sounds like it's a sort of social, fraternal, mutual aid organization for veterans, by veterans.
Yes. You have to be a veteran. You don't have to be, you had to have served or had a father or someone that has a son to join the sons or the auxiliary. And, there are a few social members that come in that we have, but it's more service-oriented for people that have served, or their spouses or fathers or someone has served, grandfathers.
That makes a lot of sense. And can you, and again, I don't want to put you on the spot here, so whatever you know and remember is great, but I'm just curious what you can tell me about the history of Post 401 in Caledonia. I know it's been around for a long time, but do you know when or where or why it formed exactly, Post 401?
No, I actually can't answer that. I know that it started out as just a small little canteen, and over the years they bought the building beside of it and knocked the wall out to enlarge the inside of it. And back in the back room, I believe it was part of Mays Hardware, there's still the old elevator that operates. It's operational back there.
I was going to say, I know that, yeah, I think the rightmost of your two storefronts was, I think that was Dick's Bar, or was some sort of bar, and then the leftmost one was the second storefront of Mays Hardware. And I heard that back in the day, they had a lot of taxidermy. I'm getting really bad feedback of my own voice because my phone network's kind of bad sometimes, so I might have to wait it out. Sorry about that. I have one bar, so this is my bottom of the barrel cell service right now. But yeah, so I heard that part of it was Mays Hardware, but when you moved in 88, the post was already set up in the Union Block where it is now?
Yes, it was all set up just the way it is right now.
With both storefronts?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And what is upstairs? Is that accessible space, or is it storage, or is that that's not part of the Masonic Hall, so what is the upstairs space like?
The upstairs, there's a completed finished room upstairs above all that. That they used to meet up there, but since most of the members have gotten older, they've done away with that, and we've built a meeting room downstairs where there was bathrooms and that back in there, so that the older legionnaires could just walk back rather than climb the stairs. But there's a fully completed room up there. It's operational, but we don't use it because there's no fire escape or anything, so it's just more storage right now.
Got it. I was always curious. It looks like a very cool space. So tell me a little bit about the role the Post 401 has played in the Caledonia community. What activities in particular do you guys sponsor? Just tell me more about what you do. I know you mentioned sponsoring different Boy Scout troops and activities, but on a given year, are there special activities or things like that that you guys host on the square?
We don't post anything on the square. We participate in whoever's doing something there, or donate to them to do their whatever they're doing on the square. The only thing that we do is, Halloween, we participate with the rest of the square and pass off candy and that for the kids.
And you guys did Christmas last, the new Friends of Caledonia Christmas. I saw you guys, I think, had the lobby open and had hot cocoa and all of that, right?
Yes. And same way with on the Halloween, we have stuff for the kids to come in, and we try to take care of the community during that time right here and bring the kids in.
Got it. And I don't know if this was way before your time, probably in the, I think I talked to Randall Underwood yesterday. I think this was back in the 50s, but can you say anything about the older traditions that the Legion used to do, like the parade out to the cemetery? I know you don't do that anymore, but or how the Memorial Day services have changed over the years, if you remember or have heard?
I have heard back in the day they had their own honor guard. They had their own uniforms, and they would march from Caledonia out to the cemetery and do the service out there. Now, we have been doing this with made-up honor guard that we've made up over the years. Butch Worcester was involved in that, and we didn't have a parade where we marched out anymore since they changed the highway and 309 is such a busy highway. But we still do the ceremony out at the cemetery. We just did it Sunday again. We had a great turnout.
Can you say more about what the ceremony consists of?
Okay, the ceremony, first of all, we have they have a cannon. They come out and they fire for us to open it up, the service. We have a guest speaker that speaks for us. Kim Mooney is the master of ceremonies. I have each one of the brand sons, regulars, and the auxiliary do a part. Like the auxiliary did the opening prayer. One of the sons did Logan's orders. One of the auxiliary ladies sang the Star Spangled Banner for us. And Captain Frank Hickman was our guest speaker this year. And then you have the honor guard that we fire our 21-gun salute out there, and we pay a young lady to come and play the taps for us. And Mark Melroy from Melroy's Funeral Home plays bagpipes for us out there.
And that's to honor all veterans from Caledonia or the surrounding community, both living and passed on?
Yes. And also at noon, we place a wreath at the honor roll, and we fire in a square at noon, the 21-gun salute, and play the taps.
Wow. I've got a question. Oh, go ahead.
We do 11 cemeteries that day going around the community here in the fire red.
And when you say you do the cemeteries, is that decorating the graves of veterans, or is that doing this same ceremony that you did at Caledonia at 11 others?
Well, we put, our post does, puts the flags out at all these cemeteries, and then on a that Sunday before Memorial Day, we get the honor guard together, and we go to each cemetery, and we fire at each cemetery.
And what is the, not being a veteran, I just want to, I think this is interesting, and I want to make sure I understand the symbolism or the meaning of firing at each cemetery is just sort of a, kind of an act of recognition and honor of those veterans?
Yes, it's 21-gun salute for their sacrifice.
And tell me if this is correct. Was Memorial Day, did it used to be called Decoration Day, or is that a separate holiday that was around the decoration of graves of veterans?
Now, many years ago, it was called Decoration Day. Over the years, they have changed it to Memorial Day.
Okay, but it sounds like you guys, as Post 401, even though other communities may not still do this, you guys are really keeping true to that spirit of Decoration Day and actually going out to the cemeteries and honoring those who have been lost.
Correct, yes.
Wow. Now, question for you. As you know, is Tim Mooney a Legionnaire?
He's a social member.
Social member, okay. So I interviewed Tim, and part of this project is looking at our organizations on the square, our fraternal organizations. Would you consider the Legion a fraternal organization, or is it slightly different? It's like a canteen, a post, a little bit different?
Yes, it's a post. It wouldn't be fraternal, no.
So I know the fraternal organizations, this is something Tim talked about, right? They've been losing members, and their membership is aging. And I was curious what that looks like from a Legion point of view, because obviously, you know, we have some veterans, probably not that many left from World War II, from the Korean War, from the Vietnam War, and then on from, you know, Desert Storm, Iraq and Afghanistan, and there's still many ongoing conflicts. So my question is, what does your membership look like? Is it mostly veterans from those earlier conflicts, or do you have younger veterans who were involved in, say, Iraq, Afghanistan, conflicts today who are joining? I'm just curious if you guys are seeing the same trends the Masons and the Oddfellows and others are with struggling to maintain membership or the membership aging. It just seems like this is maybe happening across the country, and I was curious what it looked like from a Legionnaire perspective.
Now, it's the same thing with the Legion. The older ones are phasing out or passing on. We have the Korean War, just a few of them. Hardly any World War II veterans. Majority of them that are members are Vietnam veterans. Very few from Desert Storm and the newer wars.
So majority people from Vietnam?
Yes.
Okay. And now, I want to ask about that, because I know one of the things I've learned just from interviewing some veterans is that, you know, different veterans from different wars are received differently, because different wars are received differently. And I know our Vietnam veterans in particular have had a really hard time because of the controversies surrounding the Vietnam War. And I'm curious, what's your sense of how veterans at large and how our Vietnam vets in general have been received in Caledonia? Has it been a struggle like that, where veterans have really felt like disrespected and, you know, cut out from services, or has the Legion mitigated that to some extent?
No, I believe that the veterans, the Vietnam veterans and that in Caledonia and the surrounding area here, they're received just as well, if not better than, you know, the Korean and World War II veterans, because we're the livelihood that's left. And over the years, there's no been no difference whether it was Vietnam or what war you served in around this area.
That's really interesting to hear. And why do you think? I mean, everyone has their own theories, and I'm not expecting you to be a professional sociologist on this, but why do you think veterans from those more recent wars in the 90s, 2000s, why are they not joining?
I think they have more, you know, they're raising their children and everything, and they're going to ball games and various things like that. They have different activities than to come in and sit in a post and, you know, just drink or whatever. So, and, you know, the services has changed over the years, how when you go in and how you do your basic training and the different things. So I think their mindset is quite different than the older ones that, you know, that was the thing to do, go in and BS and drink with your friends. So I believe the younger generation is getting away from that.
That's so interesting, because it kind of sounds like you're saying there's both a change in the culture, like a generational divide in how people spend their times or what time they have available. And some of that's like, you know, being retired versus, yeah, raising, you know, elementary school kids or, you know, middle or high school. But it also sounds like another division you're pointing out is that the services themselves have changed and the experience of serving has changed, which has led to different experiences when veterans return home from service, or if they're in the Guard or something. There's just kind of a different culture coming from the service itself.
Yeah, correct, yes.
Interesting. What do you guys think is the future for your post? What are the areas of growth you'd like to see, or what are the, you know, what do you want to keep going, what do you want to build, and what are your concerns looking towards the future?
As of right now, the Suns has been building up quite a bit here in the last couple of years. That generation, they seem like they want to get involved to, you know, honor their grandparents or parents or someone that has served in the service. And they seem to be getting more involved than the regulars are here lately.
And I just want to ask, so is the Suns a special designation membership group, like a social member, that is for people who are not themselves veterans, but their father or grandfather is? Or mother?
Right, yes. They had someone in their family had to have served in the service to become a son or an auxiliary member.
So is the Suns the same as auxiliary, or auxiliary is the women?
The auxiliary is the lady side, yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No, this is really helpful. And I want to ask you more about that, but real quick, can you just break down the different, like, membership categories or ways you can be affiliated with the Legion? Because as an outsider, I think this is really helpful to just kind of understand the organizational structure. Sorry to be geeky about it, but I'm learning a lot. So you can be a regular member, you can be an auxiliary member, a Sons member, or a social member. Is it just those four categories, or are there other ways to be involved?
That's the only thing we have at our post at the present time. We're actually talking about a motorcycle group, another group that you could get involved in. So as of right now, we just have them four categories right now.
And do those categories have different membership fees or dues structures and different sort of rights of access or voting privileges? Like, what are the differences between those membership categories practically in terms of how you get to be involved and what your obligations are, I guess?
Okay, a regular member, you've served your country and you have an honorable discharge. And your dues are $40 a year. And the Sons, you have to be had someone that served in the services, father, grandfather, someone, become a son of American Legion. And their post and their dues are also like $35 per year. And the ladies' auxiliary is the same thing. Someone, their father, grandfather, someone had to have served and have an honorable discharge to be able to become an auxiliary member. And I believe their dues are also $35. And the social members, we're only supposed to only have a certain percentage of social. members, and their dues are $35. But they are not, they don't have the same benefits as any benefits. They're just able to come into the post and enjoy. But the regulars are the ones that run the canteen and the post. The sons and the auxiliary are there just to support and help the regulars on the post, whatever they need.
And in terms of, like, the official meetings of the Legion, the 501c3 component, voting members are all the regular members, not the sons and the auxiliary? Or everyone can vote?
No, just on the 501c3, what we do, the donations we do ours with is just the regular members' board. Now, the sons have their own board, same thing, but they do fundraisers, and they put out charities also.
So there's almost like three 501, there's like an auxiliary, a sons, and a regular organization all within the umbrella of the larger Post 401.
Correct, yes.
See, I'm glad we're digging in. I'm actually learning a ton of it. This is a very unique structure. And tell me practically, I've never been in, I'm not a veteran myself, but I guess I could be an auxiliary member. My grandpa served in World War II, was honorably discharged. But tell me, in terms of the everyday running of the canteen, I mean, like I said, from an outsider, I'm like, oh, the Legion, you know, also is a bar because you guys are booming. When I think about, like, businesses on the square, and I know you're not a business per se, but you know, there's always traffic and cars coming to Dugout Pizza, and the square is always packed with folks for the Legion. I'm Jack and Barb Reese's granddaughter, so, like, Reese's Market parking lot is always full with the Legion. So I guess my question is, how do you guys run a very successful canteen like that? Is it all volunteer and different members, like regular members, are just serving as bartenders and purchasing the liquor and doing all of that, or do you have regular employees? I'm just curious what that side of it looks like.
We have regular employees. We actually have a canteen manager, which is Josh Gates, and he does all the purchasing of the liquor and whatever's needed in the canteen. He does all that purchasing. Bartenders are paid. They come in and they're paid. They work like 12-hour shifts, or what? You know, from they open at 11, and then whenever the last customer's out, they're there till that time. So it varies on their time.
So you guys don't close even like at 2 a.m. You might be open till 4 a.m. if someone's still there.
Oh no, we're closed way before that. We're only allowed to serve till 1 o'clock.
Okay. But the last customer is usually out, you're saying, by 10 or whatever.
Yes. They're out early, 9 o'clock sometimes even.
I see. So essentially, within the structure of the post, you've got these multiple 501c3 organizations that have board meetings and can do charitable donations and all of that and take the proceeds from the... Then it's almost like, I think we would call it like a social venture, right? It's like the canteen is the business that supports the charitable organizations. Is that kind of almost how you'd put it?
Yes.
That is so interesting. Wow. Okay. I'm learning a lot. How, I guess I would say, what role do you see the canteen playing in the public and civic life of downtown Caledonia?
Well, you know, it's a relaxing atmosphere for people. They want to come in and have a cold drink. You know, it doesn't have to be alcoholic. You know, it can be a soda or anything. Just come in, get cool, and BS with their friends and their neighbors of Caledonia. So it's a relaxing atmosphere. They're welcome. You know, they've paid their dues. They have a card that allows them to enter into the building.
And do you guys have food or only drinks, alcoholic and non-alcoholic?
The only thing they have is here recently, they've been putting some hot dogs on back there in the morning, and there's just one group of gentlemen that comes in around 11, and they'll want a hot dog and maybe a cold drink. So it's like a same group every day that's in there for this. So they sit there and eat their hot dog, drink their cold drink, and watch the soap operas.
Do you guys have your regulars?
Yes.
So I want to go back to that the question we were talking about beforehand, which was membership. I got you off on a tangent about the membership categories, but before we got there, you were saying the membership in the Sons is growing a lot faster than the regulars or the auxiliary. Take us back there and tell me more about, yeah, how you, I think my question was kind of like, what's next for you? What are your growth areas and where does the Legion want to be in the future and what are you worried about? And you were telling me the Sons is growing faster than the other categories. So tell me more about that and why you think that is.
Well, they seem like they want to get involved. Now, my firing squad this year consisted of almost all the Sons, and they raised enough money to buy shirts and their uniforms and everything to be on the honor guard, and they was very proud to be on the honor guard, you know, to show that they could do it, and it was very honoring to do this with that, I'd say, younger group. So I believe that's what is bringing in the Sons, is they see that they can get involved in it in a way that it's not only, you know, helping the post, but they're getting involved in things that they're never able to do because they're never in the military. And, you know, I was the commander for them to do all the commands. And they done real well as a young group. It was like going into basic training with a group of new people and being the DI and teach them all the, you know, movements with the weapons and all the commands. And they done very well. I was very proud of them this year.
I didn't realize that. So it's from what you're saying, it's almost like the relationship of the Sons, they get to have a military experience for themselves through their membership with the Legion and in Post 401, even though they were not veterans. So it's almost like they can have this experiential connection to what their parent or grandparent or whoever served had, but through Legion membership. Is that kind of what you guys provide?
Yes, that's what, with these ones, like I said, they're all new and they want to be on the honor guard and they get their uniforms and everything, and I showed them how to dress, and then I took them out and practiced them with the rifles and the commands and how to do it, and they picked up very well, and, you know, a great performance that we put on for the community to show the post what is capable of being done.
So you were saying that the experience that they're able to get is almost like being a part of the military, but being able to do that in civilian life without ever having served.
Correct, yes.
And my question for you then is, why is it that you think those, almost like people with nostalgic connections, why do you think it is that those people with those family connections to the military are joining at a higher rate than the veterans that might be veterans of more recent wars? Because it sounds like the Sons are maybe the same age. They're maybe like in their 30s and 40s. They're younger members as well. So why might it be that someone who didn't directly serve is getting involved in that age group but not a veteran? Do you have any thoughts on that? I just think that's kind of curious.
Well, I'm thinking that the regular veterans, they served and they put their time in and they was away from home and, you know, they went through the whole rigmarole. And, you know, they figured they've done their time. They don't want to get involved and be in meetings and get involved in doing all these things again. But the Sons have never been away from home to and be based somewhere to have to do it. So they're just gives them somewhere and it gives them, they're learning what went on, basically. And it's showing respect for their elders, the ones that has served.
So it almost seems like, too, it almost seems like the involvement is something they want because they didn't have to go through it, whereas for those who did go through it but are in that younger age group, they don't necessarily want that extra involvement and kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, procedure almost.
Correct. That's what I believe is the reason. Now, that's my opinion. Now, you know, I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what it seems like to me.
No, I think that's fascinating. And another question in terms of membership that I have, I know Caledonia is very uniquely located, sort of between, you know, 50 miles famously right from Bucyrus, from Galleon, from Marion. And my question is, where do you guys pull your members from? Maybe you guys know this statistically, maybe you just have a felt sense, but are they coming from the village, or are they coming from Clarendon, Martell, Morrow County, the countryside, multiple counties? I'm just curious, like, where you draw from and where the next closest post is, because my sense is it's from more than just people who live in the village.
Well, it's from all over each county. You know, you have Marion, Morrow, Crawford, and they're all from all these surrounding counties. There's a Legion in Galleon, Ohio, a small one. There's one in Cardington, Ohio. Now, what I know of them couple legions, there's one in Johnsville, Ohio. There's several legions around the community. But some of these legions, I know, like the one in Cardington, they're not open during the day. They're only open, like, for certain occasions. I couldn't tell you about the one in Galleon, but I was there many years ago, and it was a very small post, and I don't know whether they're open during the day and the evenings. And I think what draws our customers is our canteen, because, like I say, we open at 11 o'clock, and then until the last couple people are out of there. So I think that's what's drawing everyone into our post around the general area.
And I think my other question is then, so can people join any post they want? It's not like you have to just join one, or I'm getting all scrambled in my questions, but like, if you're a member, my understanding is of a Masonic lodge, you know, you can visit and have sort of visiting rights at other lodges, just like maybe you could visit a different church than you're a member at. But with the Legion, is it sort of like you're a general member and you can go to any post, or does someone have to pick to join Post 401, and although they can visit other posts or canteens, they have to pick their primary membership? Does that make sense as a question?
Yes. No. Once you are a member of the American Legion, you can go to any post in any state or anywhere and be accepted to come into their post.
So it's kind of like a universal membership card across anywhere in the country, and probably other countries too.
Exactly. Like, you know, if we go back to Pennsylvania to visit, and I could take that card to a post back to Pennsylvania, and they honored, just like we'd honor someone from Pennsylvania here in Ohio.
That's really cool. So is there a culture of Legionnaires visiting other posts, like going to the one in Galleon or Mount Gilead or Johnsville? Do people kind of travel and visit those posts? I know they're not all open as much as we are in Caledonia.
I don't think they go around visiting them. Well, I'd say some of them around here do that, because you have in Marion, Ohio, you have 584 and 162 in Marion. So
there's two whole separate posts in Marion.
Yes. They're both American Legions, and I think they have quite a bit of membership in there.
So it sounds like people decide which post to belong to for a number of reasons. It might be the space, it might be what's closest to them, where they feel comfortable, but also the hours. Is that generally what you see, that like the people who have joined 401, it's the closest one to them, or it's the next closest one because the one that's closest to them, maybe in Morrow County, for example, isn't open in the daytime? Are those kind of the reasons why someone would join a certain post?
I'd say they join a certain post is wherever their friends are at, more than likely. You know, if their friends are at 584, they'll probably join 584 because they're going to be wanting to socialize with their friends. And the ones, you know, 401 is close in the community. They don't want to travel into Marion with the laws and everything. So they and their friends are here in Caledonia. So I believe that's the reason they join, which post they join.
So that's kind of why, like, for example, you were saying George Kasotis is a member at 401, even though he lives in Marion, because he grew up in Marion, so a lot of his friends are, he grew up in Caledonia, so a lot of his friends and contacts from the old times are probably at 401.
Yes, that's what I believe, and like I say, he was a member of 584 and transferred to 401.
So it sounds like you have one primary membership and then can kind of switch around.
Yes.
So I think my question for you both as a resident of not the village, but the Caledonia area, are you in Canaan Township or which direction are you in tomorrow?
I'm in Canaan Township.
Okay. Yeah. We count that as Caledonia, right? So what is kind of your sense of where Caledonia is at right now compared to when you moved in the 80s? I know you said in 88 there was hardware store, Reese's Market, you know, pizza shop, all of that going on. What's your sense of the kind of, what's your sense of, like, life and businesses on the square right now? Where are things at, and how do you and the Legionnaires feel about it?
Well, it seems, you know, everything is down in Caledonia, it seems, as of right now. You know, there's no businesses hardly there at all. And, you know, without fraternal organizations and the post, and there's no diners, there's nothing there. To attract or draw people into the community. So somewhere, you know, they need to, you know, get a diner and a decent place for family to go have a meal. And, you know, the grocery store, when Reese's went out, there's no grocery stores, you know, except for the Dollar General now in Caledonia. So, you know, people have to travel to Marion or Mount Gilead or somewhere, or Bucyrus, probably to get all their groceries out of Caledonia anymore. So, you know, they need to bring something to attract people. It needs to regrow again, the town.
And what do you think would help with that the most? I know you mentioned a diner or groceries besides Dollar General. Do you think a store or a critical mass of businesses in the empty storefronts would make that difference? Or do you think it's going to be, you know, festivals or the farmers market or that sort of stuff that's going to bring people back? Like, what do you think would do it, would be that magic bullet, if there is one?
Well, the farmer's market, that's bringing people back, but that's only during a few months in the summer. During the winter, the place is shut down, basically. You know, the only ones that gets any business during that is the fraternal organizations and the post. There's nothing in the storefronts for anybody to come and, you know, say, boy, you know, we ought to go to Caledonia because they have this one great store here that sells whatever. You know, something to attract people to bring from out of the into, so they can see what's in Caledonia. Right now, everybody just drives through 309 and says, yep, there's Caledonia.
And what do you think is special about our downtown and our public square? I know you're really passionate, and I share that about, you know, getting people to see what we have to offer. How would you describe what downtown Caledonia and the public square has to offer to the world?
Actually, there's very little down there right now to offer them. I mean, you know, the biggest thing I think as of right now it's in the square is, you know, the honor roll. It's there. You know, that's the only outstanding thing that's right in that corner because, you know, I know that our lodge, Masonic Lodge, you know, they have a sign up, and on the door, you know, the Oddfellows says it's the Oddfellows, and on the same door, it's the OES, the Order of Eastern Stars are in that building. But how many people actually know? You could tell them, you know, I belong to the Masonic Lodge, but where's that at in Caledonia? Well, it's up in the square. It's in that corner over there, but nobody ever recognizes realizes it's actually up in there. And, you know, there's no advertisements down on the highway or anywhere, you know, about, you know, Masonic Lodge and the Easter Stars and that's up in there. American Legion Post 401 up in here. You know, if we even had a sign down there, some signs at the road to say, you know, on 309, what's up in there? Maybe that would show people, you know, come up and visit.
Well, and I think you pointed out this interesting, I don't know if it's like a contradiction, but it is funny to think about it. Like, the things that are the most booming in our downtown storefronts are kind of hidden, and they're private in some ways. Like, you can't just walk into the Legion or the Masonic Lodge, but even for members, it's like, you know, the lodge is tucked away, like you said, upstairs, above, dugout in the library or the Legion. You can see that it's there, but there's not a lot of, they're like kind of private spaces. So although we have ways that people can be social and visit our storefronts and be involved in the buildings downtown, it's kind of membership only. And even then, like you said, there's not indication of that on 309. I think you probably have heard about this, but I think Mark Melroy said he's trying to get some sort of signage for the town out on 309.
Oh, no, I haven't heard anything from Mark on that one.
Maybe it was Tim. Someone said they were trying to get some signage up. I can't remember. But I know with Glengarry taking down their sign, I think April said, you know, people are kind of worried that people won't even know how to get to Caledonia. They'll just drive right past it because there's not a lot of indication. Hey, there's a village right here. You just got to turn.
Yeah, you know, when you come into some of these villages and towns, and, you know, there's the sign posted before you get to it. If it says village of so-and-so, found it in so-and-so, there's not even a marking anywhere that I know of. There, maybe I missed it. I don't know. But, you know, on 309, you know, to show this is a village. But I know, you know, on my Masonic trips, when I'm going down into different places over there, it'll say, you know, village of LaRue, found it, and, you know, all the information about it. I think that somewhere they should put a couple of them signs up, somewhere, anyhow.
And I'm trying to think, I know exactly what you're talking about, and a lot of times those have, what's the name for it? It's like that kind of wooden lattice thing that people have, you know, under their porches or their deck, between the ground and the deck. It's like they have a thing like that. It's almost like, you know, a fence lattice thing, and they'll have the Lions Club logo and all of that. And I wonder if the different, I don't know about how they get those welcome signs, and they'll say, you know, athletes that came from there or what they're known for. I know exactly what you're talking about. A lot of communities have them, and I wonder if those are just the fraternal organizations and the posts and things get together and sponsor that, or I don't know where those signs come from. But, yeah, it does seem like something like that would be possible for us and could get the word out.
Yeah, like I said, you know, people traveling 309 are doing 55 mile an hour. They're through Caledonia. They don't read nothing, don't see anything. They see, you know, a little gas station and the old rundown bar, and they're probably thinking, you know, this is what's up in, must be up in that little place. It's like what we used to call back home company houses. You know, and what they was, the coal mines built these houses. It was all the same, and it was all in a small area like Caledonia, and each house was the same. But the company owned them, and the people worked at the coal mines paid their rent to the coal mines for living in these houses. So, you know, if you're an old person like me that was born in Pennsylvania, and you knew what company houses are, and you see that old bar sitting there on 309, and then you only see these couple of the gas station and a couple of houses, and then open ground, and then, you know, the cemetery, you're thinking, well, that must just be a company house place up in there.
I think that's interesting. You feel like what is on 309 kind of like sets the impression for what people who don't know Caledonia would think, and it's almost like, you're saying from what they're seeing on 309, they might never imagine that we had this grand public square with these old buildings like that.
Exactly. You know, if I'd come up in the square and see them old buildings, you know, it'd give them, at least they'd see something, and I don't know.
And tell me a little bit about, I would love to hear about what you think about the buildings on the public square, kind of the character, the impression they leave, and then kind of what it's like for the Legion to be in the Union Block, if you want to share a little bit about that.
Well, you know, all them old buildings they have, if they could talk, it'd be interesting the history that you could get from them. You don't find buildings like that built anymore. And, you know, for it to be one block like that, and them old buildings structurally still standing as good as they are, you know, it brings a lot into the community to say, you know, look at these old buildings, look how they've been maintained. And, you know, you're not going to see this architecture that's on the top of some of these buildings anywhere. So, you know, it's quite impressive to be able to be in that any of them organizations that's inside them buildings. And, you know, I belong to each one of the organizations in that Holton Square. So.
Wait, so you're a Mason and an Oddfellow?
I'm not an Oddfellow. I am a Mason, and I belong to the Order of Eastern Stars.
I didn't know you could belong to Masons and Eastern Stars. I thought one was the auxiliary of the other, but they're kind of different?
Yes. Yes, I am a Mason, and you have to become an Eastern Star, someone has to be a member of the Mason, a husband, or your husband has to be a Mason, or someone in your family had to be a Mason to become an Eastern Star.
So what is the advantage of joining both the Masons and the Eastern Stars? Just more chances to get involved, or they need additional support, or...
Well, basically, the reason I did it is to support the Stars, because it's like, you know, Tim would pray, as he even told you, you know, the getting people to join is really rough. And, you know, if they don't have enough people, these organizations are going to shut down. So, you know, at one time, all the Masons joined the Oddfellows to keep it supported, to keep it there, because we rent the building from the Oddfellows, the Masons do. And so, you know, same way at the Eastern Stars, if we don't support them and help them, we're going to lose them in the community.
And as a fraternal organization member, I've talked to Tim, but you're a different person. So what do you think the role is that our, in addition to the Legion and the Post, what role do you think our fraternal organizations play or have played in Caledonia's heritage?
Actually, they, you know, are pretty close to like the Legion Post. You know, we do donations, we take care of people in the community. You know, we're an organization that helps people and helps one another, you know, through brotherhood. And, you know, we're kind of quiet. People don't know what we actually do there at the lodge, but, you know, we support everything in the community from the lodge aspect also. You know, the car show was one of the things that Tim organized, and, you know, we supported that.
Was that like 2018, 2017?
Yeah.
That was amazing. I was there. That was just really inspiring. It was like the square was alive again. I felt like I was in the 70s.
Right. So, you know, we participated in that, and, you know, so we're basically as material, or we get involved with things in the community, but we're in the background. We don't stand out and jump out and say, hey, we did this, you know.
Is that okay, or do you think you need to change that?
No, we're not out to advertise. You know, we're out to help people. That's what our goal is. You know, that's what Masonic bodies are about. It's not only, you know, our lodge, but the whole Masonic fraternity is out to help people, is what it's designed to do. It's to make good men better.
That's great. And the Post seems to be a lot like the Masons, like we were saying, in that there is this local iteration, like, you know, Oliver Lodge 447 or Post 401, but then there's a national organization. There's a state, I know, you know, probably a state grand, I don't know if it's a Grand Lodge, State Lodge for the Masons. And then also, is there a state organization for the American Legion for Ohio organizations as well, or is it just national and the Post for the Legion?
Now, there is one state organization. It's in, actually, it's in Delaware, Ohio. That's the district is where they're out of. And they're the ones we do and pay our dues to, because we have to submit our dues to someone for the state and the district. So that's where our district is out of, Delaware, Ohio.
That's what I was going to ask, kind of what the relationship was to the larger organization. So you pay dues to the district, and then they pass it on up. And do you guys go to conferences or convenings of, like, as leadership, as the commander of all of, do all the commanders get together? What's the kind of structure like that gets us from our local post at 401 to district, state, and the National American Legion organization?
They have state meetings. Actually, there was one that I attended last month. It was at 162 in Marion, where the state officers was reelected, or the district officers, I'm sorry. District officers was reelected, and they had a meeting at 162 last month. And actually, I attended that meeting.
So it sounds like there's almost like a, just an opportunity for shared governance of the organization, not the commanders of the post get to vote or get to attend meetings that then elect leadership at the district, and then district gets together and elects state, that sort of thing?
Correct. That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Is there anything about the history or the role of the Legion or Post 401 that you feel like you really haven't gotten to share yet?
No, not really. I don't believe probably Tim is probably knows more about the Masonic side of it, because he's been a member there a lot longer than I have. And, you know, that's basically all members, or everybody in the community basically is the members of Masonic Lodge.
And then I guess I'll ask you a silly question then. In terms of, like, life inside the canteen at the Legion, I know you said, you know, you've got your regulars who come and eat the hot dogs they've started putting out. Is there, you know, how some bars and things like that or restaurants have a signature drink or a house hot sauce or something they're known for, is there a type of drink or beverage or something like that that our canteen at Post 401 is particularly known for over the years, or do people just come and get their regular?
No, there's nothing special. Basically, they have their regulars, and you know, the bartenders know exactly when they see them come through the door, they can set their drink on the bar because they know exactly what they're getting. It's almost like reputation, you know. Here's, they're coming in this time, they're going to drink this, and it's just amazing to me. I mean, you know, I've only been up there a few times at 11 o'clock when I've had meetings with bartenders and that. They're standing at the door, these older gentlemen, and waiting to come in at 11 o'clock. It just totally shocked me.
So it sounds like you really do have regulars. Like, it really is a place where people are creatures of habit. They come at their time, they get their order, and there's that kind of predictability about it, or comfort about it.
Yes. Like I said, the older veterans, they're there at 11 o'clock when the place opens, and they're ready for their cold drink, and, you know, then they want, after the hot dogs are ready, they're ready for their hot dogs, and, you know, a couple hours, and then I guess they just mosey on out to the day. So
kind of
interesting.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, just I'm asking all these nitty-gritty organizational questions, but how often do you guys meet as members of the Legion? Is it kind of just like a monthly meeting in addition to the regular canteen chatting that people get to do, or how does that work?
Our meeting is the second Tuesday of every month for the regulars, and that's the Board of Trustees. We meet the second Tuesday of every month. The Suns meet the first or the second Monday of every month, and the Ladies Auxiliary meets the first Thursday of the month, and they have their regular meetings.
And I forgot if I asked this before, but what are you able to give, like, an estimate of what your numbers are right now? Just kind of curious, like, where we're landing. I was surprised to hear the Masons, for example, were, like, in the hundreds. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Actually, we only have about 59 regular members at our lodge. At our post.
And then the Suns is, you said, quite larger.
Yes. I think the Suns, you know, not quite larger, but, you know, they're in the 70s to the 80s numbers. The Auxiliary, I'm guessing, probably around the 60 numbers, just guessing. I don't see their numbers. The only numbers I actually see are regular numbers.
And then the social members, you said there's just only a certain proportion, so it's probably, like, smaller, like 30 or 40?
Yes, very small on the socials, because,
That's a great story.
It's governed by the state, you know, drawing a lot to have a certain percentage of regulars compared to, socials with so many regulars.
But it sounds like all told across all four groups, it's, you know, I don't know, 200 people, something like that.
Maybe at the max, yes.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I have any other history questions. Well, I do actually have one. I think it was before your time, but again, and you might not know the answer to this, and no pressure at all, but did you or have you heard anything about when the Legion was located over in the Masonic Block building? I think it was in the space that became the Noggles Floral Shop, maybe in the 70s. Have you heard anything about back when it was in that other space? I know it was probably 10 years before you even got to Ohio, but...
No, I didn't hear anything on any of that. See, that's the reason I thought, you know, Bob Cherrick would probably be able to, you know, relate to that.
No, I mean, this is totally great. I think what's amazing is you have such a working knowledge because you're in the leadership role of, you know, membership and how things are changing and what things look like. And I guess the other questions I want to ask you just to close us out, I know we've been talking for an hour or so, and I apologize again for the tech issues and then the different interruptions with my soundscape here. But what for you would the Legion post 401 look like in 10 years? Again, I'm not asking you necessarily to be realistic, but in an ideal scenario or an ideal situation, where would post 401 be in 10 years?
Well, that is a scary thought in my book right now. In 10 years, most of us Vietnam veterans are going to be deceased. But we're all in our 70s, some plus 70s. Because, you know, and right now the Vietnam veterans are the backbone of all the organizations like that. And I'm afraid that they'll be lucky that there is any American Legion in the years to come. You know, I not only belong to the American Legion over here, but I belong to an honor guard in Morrow County. I'm with the VFW honor guard out of Morrow County. And there, when we do the funerals, we do a lot more out of Morrow than we do Marion here, but when we do funerals, the ones that show up right now for the honor guard are basically all Vietnam veterans. And like we talk amongst ourselves, when we're gone, there's no one to fill our shoes or coming behind us to do it. So that's the reason, you know, I don't see these organizations being around in 10 years. I could be totally wrong, but that's just my opinion. If this younger generation doesn't step up here within the next few years, there will be no Masonics, there will be no posts, no legions, no ambets, no nothing. But, and, you know, with the inflation the way it is, people's not going to be coming out, and they're not going to be doing all this traveling and wanting to go to any of these places. They're not going to be able to afford to even go. So something's going to have to change drastically for these things to survive.
Yeah, and I hear that, and it's so heartbreaking because these are traditions and spaces that have played such a role in the community that people have stewarded tirelessly, you know, for decades. Do you guys have a succession plan to recruit younger members? I know the Suns membership is ramping up, but even at the, like, district or state or national level in the Legion, I'm sure this is talked about, but what are the strategies for connecting to that generation of Gulf War and Iraq and Afghanistan veterans that you said kind of have a different lifestyle and have different priorities? What do you do?
Well, they have programs that they keep trying, different programs to try to bring these people in and draw them in, but it just doesn't seem to be working. You know, it's like the Masonic, which is, you know, it's basically the same, but it's a little different. You know, a Legion, they come and they come to a canteen. They don't have to have come to no meetings or anything. But the Masonic side, you know, they'll bring them into the fraternity and they'll get their Master Mason degree, but you never see them come back to the lodge, basically. So you have numbers, but they're not active in it. So if they're not active, the older ones get burned out after a while, because they're the ones that have to keep carrying the lodge to keep it open.
And I'm glad you're saying that, too, because, you know, something I recognize from working in nonprofits, it's the same sort of thing, right? Like, in order to avoid burnout, you always have to have succession plans and bring people in, but then there's also a gap in sort of knowledge and institutional memory. Like, if the people who are really tired and have been doing it for years know how to do it, it's a lot of work also to get someone up to speed who doesn't know how it runs or what the history or significance is, you know? So it is a real problem, and it's interesting that, yeah, like you said, and Tim said, so many of our organizations from this older era and model where things are more communal are facing this. And I think society now, in my generation at least, I think people are, they feel so isolated, and they just do things by and for themselves. And I think training a different generation, like Gen X or Millennials or Gen Z, to be a part of these more community organizations is probably an uphill battle in some ways.
Yeah, and, you know, you have no backup plan. There's no one that's going to fill in the... They need taught how to do these things. But, you know, the replace yourself program is pretty difficult when you can't find them to replace yourself with.
Is that the name of the national program?
Yes, Replace Yourself.
And it literally is like bring people in to replace Don Bodwater and others who are doing all of this work for years?
Exactly. That's what it amounts to. You know, you bring someone into the fraternities, and then, you know, they're there when you're gone. That's your replacement that you put in.
But you're saying despite all the money poured in at federal, at the national level, state, district, and even locally, that program, people will train, kind of like with the Masons, they'll train up and then they walk out and they just don't have the heart for it in the same way. Cause you can't make that stuff up, you know?
Right.
Wow. And what about for Caledonia? Do you see a different future for downtown Caledonia? Where would you like Caledonia to be in 10 years on our public square? And what do you think is really going to happen in 10 years? Maybe I'll hold space for the dream and the reality in case they're different.
Well, you know, if you look at the square now, it has been cleaned up a little bit. You know, with our new neighbor that moved in and bought May's hardware store beside of it, he's made it look real nice. And, you know, the businesses and what's there is trying to keep the buildings maintained and keep the place looking nice. And it's become very expensive to do these things. You know, I have someone right now, I'm trying to get, we want to paint the top of the building up there, all the way around, across the face. And, you know, they're talking $4,000 to paint that up there, is a quote we get. You you know, that's quite a bit of money just to put paint on the top of the building. And that's only just our section. That's not counting Bard's section that's beside of us or the Oddfellers. So, you know, in the years to come, there's no businesses there. And if the businesses are there, the fraternities that are there, they start slacking off and going away, and there's no income, the buildings are just going to continue to deteriorate, and, you know, it'll just be a run-down ghost town if someone don't, you know, step up to the plate and do something in it.
And I'm glad we're talking about all this, because tonight is when Village Council votes on the historic district that I've been really organizing around, and this is what I do professionally. You know, I'm a historic preservationist. I nominate buildings and districts, and that, I don't know, were you at the meeting, or did Sharon or someone else come to represent the Legion?
Sharon represented for me because yep. I had a fraternal meeting.
Oh, no so. Worries. Yeah, it was just interesting. One of the things I said is, you know, one of the reasons we do a historic district is not just to recognize the history, but because it comes with, you can get 45% tax credits on qualified rehab expenses. And I wanted to make sure you knew, yes, I know nonprofits don't have tax liability, but there's something a lot of nonprofits do called syndication, where essentially you form an LLC with some corporation that does have tax liability, like a bank or a grocery store, and then you can get cash on the dollar for the tax credits to do rehab. So part of the reason we're, April and I, are really pushing for the district. Oh, I'm getting my, give me a sec. It's like every 15 minutes or so, I just get my voice. Ooh, gotta take my headphones off for a minute. And my connection's super bad. Give me 1 second. I pay a lot for cell service. You'd think it would work better. I broke my phone and had to get a new phone a month ago, and it's a phone that can do 5G, but I don't have 5G on my plan, and now I just get all of this feedback all the time, and they gave me a, hold on. This is like one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, and one of the worst in terms of technology, so I'm just hearing my own echo. I don't even think you can hear it. I think it's just on my end, but it's in my recorder. But, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons April and I are pushing for the district, because the tax credits can really help with rehabilitation, but the last I heard is that a lot of council members aren't in favor of it now. They voted yes for it in April and in May, but we have to put in a grant that's going to give the entity that applies for it the reimbursement for paying for my time to do the nomination, and they're voting on that tonight, and I think several people have told me they're really worried it's not going to pass because people just don't care enough, and that's heartbreaking, because I really do think, like you said, these buildings are going to need some care very quickly, and they needed it 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I see. They just we've done some repairs on the one there on the square on that one side there, well, on the market. Place there.
Yeah, on the Masonic Block building. I've been working on that.
Yeah, I've seen where I think the bricks fell out or something. I've seen they was redoing them.
Yeah, a couple of bricks fell from the parapet wall, so we had to have that taken down and stored, because what's happening in all the buildings is the mortar. Those two buildings, Reese's Market, called the Temple Block, where the Pythians were, and the Masonic Block, they were built in 1897, so the mortar has lost its cementing power. So when you've got these overhanging structures like a parapet wall that you have on a couple of the buildings, they're really vulnerable. And then when the freeze and thaw cycles come, like we had a ton this winter, sometimes you'll get 17 freeze and thaws in a winter, it weakens the mortar to the point where you'll lose bricks. So a lot of our buildings, I would say, need repointed or tuck pointed to have that new mortar put back in, so it's actually stuck together.
Yeah, we just tuck pointed the west side of ours a couple of years ago, the post, and the back side had it re-tuck pointed here around the same period of time. So ours has been tuck pointed here recently, so hopefully we're in good shape for a day or two.
Well, and I like what you said, though. I do take that to heart, that it's the buildings that have active organizations in them. Like, that's why the Union Block, I think, is in such better shape than, say, the Class of 55 building that was Carol Alt's or the Masonic Block, because those two have been vacant for so long, at least 20 or 30 years, right? Well, no, not Carol Alt's, but, like, the Masonic Block building, I think the last store in there was the Noggles that went out in the 90s, you know, so it's been vacant for, you know, 10 or 15, 20 years, and I think when they sit vacant like that, there's no money coming in to fix them up, and it's also like, well, if there's not someone in there, you don't notice that the roof leaks or it doesn't bother you as much. So I think you're right that having active organizations, and so I'm so sorry, I might have to call back in a second just because I'm just hearing everything that I say, like, with a 5-second delay. It's super loud. You can't hear that at all, right?
No.
I don't know what is going on with my phone. Today is not my technology day, I guess, but yeah, it's like when they have a Legion or an Oddfellows Lodge or a Masonic Lodge in the building, you guys take care of the building because people take care of spaces they're inhabiting, you know, but when they're vacant, that's when I think things really take a turn for the worst, you know?
Yes, a vacant building will fall apart quicker than a vacated building.
And I think my other question I had for you, I'm just curious about this, because we have this situation in a lot of our buildings in Caledonia. There is 4 buildings occupying 5 storefronts in the Union Block building. There's you, there's Ryan Bard in the old half of the Maze Hardware, there's Dugout Pizza, and there's the old library space that's vacant now. How do you guys collaborate or not on maintenance of the building? Is there, like, collective meetings about work that needs done with the roof or the brick, or is it kind of like each slice of the building takes care of itself? I'm just curious because, like, it's a funny situation where they're all separate, but it's all one building.
Actually, the roofs are different up there. They are separated, the roofs are.
So you guys each maintain your own roof, and that makes it nice and easy.
Exactly. You know, Ryan has his, there's parapet walls up there that separates our section from his section, and then the same way with the Oddfellows. And, you know, it's pretty, if you get up on the roofs, it's very visible whose is whose up there.
So it almost just looks like one building, but it really is like 5 little buildings slapped together.
Yes. Well, it's actually 3. It'd be the post, and then Ryan, and then the Oddfellows. That's how the roofs were divided up there.
Got it. So the post, even though historically, what's kind of odd is historically Maze Hardware was Ryan Bard's building and half of the Legion, but those two are separate roofs, whereas the Legion and the two that are the Legion now, it was half of Maze Hardware and the old bar, those are together in terms of being a kind of a unit of structure with a shared roof?
Yes.
So interesting.
Quite interesting, yes.
I was just curious how it worked, because, yeah, we're doing some work, like I said, on the Masonic building right now, and it's the same way where but that one's really weird. The Masonic building is weird because it's all one lodge upstairs, but it's 3 separate storefronts downstairs, and none of the downstairs storefronts have stairs to access the upstairs, you know? So if you're standing in what was the Noggle's Flower Shop or what was Merv's Pizza, you can't get upstairs. And so that one's an even more kind of complicated situation because technically each of those is a legal parcel up and down, but the upstairs is all shared. So I think that's its own, all these weird patterns of how things are divided up based on how it was in the 1890s, you know?
Yeah, very interesting.
So I've asked most of the questions I have, especially about the kind of future of the square. I think the only other thing I wanted to ask is, we've talked off and on about the things you think would make a difference for Caledonia. If there was one or two things, whether it's a business, an event, a service, a campaign, a sign on the road, that you think would change the fate of Caledonia and that would get more people downtown and that would draw in business and that would raise tax revenue for the village, what are the one or two or three things that for you would make that critical difference for our public square and for the community?
Okay, I think, like I said, if you brought something into the square up here, you know, some type of a specialty store or something that, you know, would be different from anything that nobody's seen before. You know, I need to go to Caledonia because they sell this specific thing right here. You know, that would attract people to come into the village. And then, you know, if he had some other storefronts there with various things in it, was that would bring things in, or people in, I believe. And the signs out at the road, you know, to let them know what's up in the community up in there. You know, it's not just a little housing project up in there. I think that's the two biggest things. Because, you know, people go over to the Amish country because they got something special. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So that's their attraction. You need some type of an attraction like that.
I love
that.
That's
my theory.
That's great. And I hope people take it to heart and put in those, what do they call it, niche markets, right? If you can build that niche and, like, get people something that they can't get at the Dollar General, the Walmart. You're not going to beat them on toilet paper prices or canned beans, but if you have specialty stuff, bulk goods, old-time candy, something that you can't get anywhere else, that's where you're going to get people coming on a Saturday from Columbus even, you know?
Exactly. Something, you know, let's make a trip here because this really looks interesting, you know.
I think something, I do a lot of work in the heritage sector, and we call it heritage tourism, right? And I think towns like ours, if you can't make it with kind of straight things you used to have, like the diner, the grocery store, whatever, I think even someplace like Reese's Market, my theory is, like, that's my family story, you know, I think if Reese's Market would have held out from 2010 to now, I think it would be hopping with tourists because it would, people wouldn't come for their regular groceries, but they would come because it was like an old-timey attraction and it was unusual and it was like it used to be in the 50s. And I think that's the kind of stuff, that heritage tourism value, that is going to save our small towns even more than, we might not be able to bring back the poor grocery stores we used to have, but if we have things that are selling an experience, then people will, that's going to make it worthwhile for them because it's value added. It's not just competing with the prices of Walmart, it's giving an experience.
Right, just like, you know, your Reese's Market there, you know, it was always famous for Jack's bratwurst, you know, and for the way he'd go back, bring a slab of meat out, and you want a steak here, he'd cut it for you right there. You know, you don't find that anywhere anymore. So, you know, Jack's bratwurst, you know, was a popular thing back in the day. So, you know, the specialty bratwurst would bring people, you know, to come in.
I'm kind of thinking like of G&R Tavern and the role it played in Waldo. You know, that's world famous now.
Yeah, with their bologna down there.
Exactly. We got to have the equivalent of the bologna sandwich, right?
Yeah, something. That's what I say. Something different that attracts people. You know.
I don't know if we do bratwurst though. I think Crawford County might have a fit.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, when I first came here, that was a big thing. You know, you had to get Jack's bratwurst or your sausage. You know, it was all handmade. I guess that'd be your grandpa.
Yeah, my grandpa.
Yeah, that was all handmade that Jack did back here. You know, he'd grind his own sausage and put his own seasonings in. And, you know, it's way, I remember doing this as a kid on the farm. You know, we raised our own hogs. We did our own meat processing and grinding and all that. So it was kind of like going back in history, watching it be made again.
And I think, like you said, those are the things, like in Amish country, those are the experiences that people will make a trip for, even if more expensive than Meijer, because it's something you're never going to see at a Meijer.
Exactly. Right. You know, the old way that it was done and see it being made, you know, instead of you go to the grocery store and you buy Bob Evans down on the farm, you know. What's so great about Bob Evans down on the farm? You know, Jimmy Dean's pictures on it. But, you know, here you're taking a hog, you're grinding it up, and, you know, you're making it right there. You're showing them, here's what we're baking. Here it is, you know. Caledonia's favorite sausage.
I love that. I've got big dreams of revitalizing Reese's Market and bringing it all back, but I have one problem, which is that I'm a vegetarian. I'm the only grandchild that's a vegetarian, and I'm the only one who wants to bring back Reese's Market, so I guess I'm going to have to hire a butcher and be okay with that.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of antiques I believe it. And I think, you know, if you look in the windows, it looks like the antiques are still in that building. I don't know, but just walking by it, you know, it seems like it's the way it was years ago.
Yeah, and a lot of that my grandma actually did in the 80s. It was almost kind of self-conscious, right? Like, she put stuff in because the store was all 50s from when Warren built it out, my great-grandpa. She collected antiques and put them on display to kind of make it feel like an old-timey store, even in the 80s, which is kind of, that was kind of the era where that was big, too, the kind of country chic craze. But I do think all of that, and something like that, not even old-time stuff, but specialty stuff, like you said, would make a difference. But, yeah, I think those are most of my big questions for you. I'm sure if I let you go, I'll have five other questions I didn't think of. But is there anything you didn't get to share that you really want to have on the record for this interview?
No, nothing I can think of. But if you have something that comes up later and I can help you out, be more than glad to reach out to me. And like I say, I may not answer you right away because I'm either, if I have a power mower or I'm doing something in the yard or something, I don't hear this phone ring, so.
Well, I'm glad Tim Mooney put in a good word and I was able to get through. I really enjoyed this interview, and thanks for putting up with all the technical difficulties and interruptions with my cell phone, internet, people who live in my house, all the different stuff going on today. But I've really loved getting to, I've learned a lot about the Legion. I've learned a lot about the role it plays in the community, and also just the urgency of, I think, the community realizing if we want these organizations to survive, we have to get younger generations. Like I'm 34, and I must admit, I don't know anyone who's a part of a fraternal organization or a Legion post, and I think it is a question of people my age considering just learning about what these organizations that we might not be familiar with have to offer. And then also feeling some responsibility that, like, these are the organizations that are carrying Caledonia. So if we want them to go on, you got to, instead of starting new things all the time and other organizations, why not invest in and carry the torch with the organizations that have been around that people put all that labor into? I think I really take that to heart from talking with you and talking with Tim. So I really thank you for bringing that perspective to the project. And hopefully the website and the things we build from these interviews will help amplify that and maybe lead to some new members and some interest from younger folks.
Very good. Yeah, I hope so.
I'll try to make
Caledonia alive, right?
Yeah, I'll try to make my silent commitment to the Replace Yourself program. Which.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time so much, John. I hope you have a wonderful day, and looking forward to connecting more. And if you're bored tonight at 7, it is the Village Council meeting where they're discussing the historic district. So I'd welcome your perspectives if you're interested in listening in and if you're free tonight.
Well, sorry to say, I have a chapter council meeting in Marion tonight. So.
Well, it sounds like that's more important for the maintenance of the post. But we'll keep you posted, and maybe we'll get a work on a district. And if not now, we'll keep trying for the future. So thank you for your time.
Yeah. You're quite welcome. Well, thank you.
Have a great day. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So once again, we were talking with Dawn Broadwater. I'm Jess Lamar Reese-Holler. It is Wednesday, June 1st, 2022, and this was an interview for the Caledonia Public Square Memories and Futures Project. Thank you for listening.